You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramalides. I'm joined just about by Sid Lowe, who is on his last legs, Sidney. It's been a pretty extraordinary weekend. You've been all over Spain covering Spanish football, as per usual. You were at the Bernabeu on Saturday night. Then you went down to Seville for the Seville derby on Sunday evening. Then you headed back up to the other point of the country, to Barcelona this morning to see Xavi's presentation. And then you've got to somehow find your way back to Madrid this evening. I won't keep you, but we do have a bit to talk about. We do have quite
quite a lot, don't we?
We do.
What a weekend. I'm starting to regret cancelling the trip to Vigo now.
Yes. You were due to go to Vigo instead. You stayed in Madrid and I went to the Bernabeu, which wasn't quite as thrilling, but it had its moments as well. This is what happened then on match day 13. Friday night saw Cadiz go to Bilbao and beat Athletic 1-0 for the second year in a row. A huge result for Álvaro Cervera's men. Then on Saturday, Espanyol continued their decent form, beating Granada by 2-0. R.D.T. scoring. And then, being called up to the Spain squad, he replaced Ansu Fati, who opened the scoring for Barcelona in their thrilling 3-3 draw with Celta. Barca were 3-0 up at half-time. Ansu had scored. They were playing brilliantly. And then it all went pear-shaped. Ansu went off injured. Barcelona conceded 3 goals, the last of which in the 96th minute to brilliant Barry Aspas. It finished 3-3. What a game it was. Alaves also left it late before beating Levante 2-1. Joselu scoring the winner in injury time. They came from behind, 21 games without a win for Levante. And then Madrid beat Rayo by 2-1 at the Santiago Bernabeu. Real Madrid were 2-0 up. They looked to be cruising, but then off came El Tigre. Falcao came off from the bench. He scored, got injured, went off, but set up what looked like it could have been a comeback for Rayo. Real Madrid were kind of holding on towards the end, but they did hold on for a fourth consecutive 2-1 win. Then on Sunday, Villarreal got a really important victory, beating Getafe by 1-0. Villarreal started that game 2 points above the relegation zone. It's not been a good time for Unai Emery's men. Then we had another unbelievable 3-3 draw. Atletico Madrid were 3-1 up at Mestalla. They were seemingly cruising. Antoine Griezmann had scored an unbelievably good goal. He was playing really well. And then Hugo Duro came off the bench for Valencia and scored 2 goals in injury time in the 91st and 96th minute. Again, Valencia scoring twice in injury time to rescue a point, as they had done a few weeks ago against Mallorca. Speaking of Mallorca, they scored late themselves to draw 2-2 with Elche. Osasuna were beaten 2-0 at home by brilliant, fantastic leaders, La Real. We're running out of adjectives to describe him and Alguacin's men. They're just doing unbelievably well, and they're still top. 13 match days in and they're still top. And then the big game of the weekend, El Gran Derby, the Seville derby. It was won by Sevilla pretty comfortably in the end, 2-0 away to Betis. Betis playing the majority of the game with 10 men after Guido Rodriguez was sent off just before half time. Coming up over at patreon.com/TSFP this week, we'll have a Q&A pod out tomorrow answering all of your questions. I think that podcast might be pretty long. We've got a new episode of TSFP Presents Messy Moments as well, and a bonus pod talking the clash of international football powerhouses that is Greece against Spain in World Cup qualifying. Plus, we've got producer Al's near daily paper reviews. Join us. It's just €4.25 a month, so basically nothing. The talking points of this weekend then. Well, we're going to start with the Xavi presentation. You were there at the Camp Nou today, so were almost 10,000 fans. Everyone seemed pretty happy, and Xavi seemed pretty assured, didn't he, in that press conference?
I thought he was very assured, and I think when you go there as a journalist, obviously there are certain things you're looking for, things that may reveal something, but that's not always the same as the overall sense of how a person I was going to use the word perform. I'm not sure if perform is the right word, but it sort of is, isn't it? How a person performs in that environment. Now, in terms of the kind of the news lines, if you like, the interesting things were Xavi revealing that twice before he'd been offered the Barcelona job. Now, we knew that, but he said very clearly, I was. And he said, and although people say I wasn't, in other words, the previous regime, I was twice offered this job. And twice, for different reasons each time, turned it down. He also revealed that it is indeed true that he'd been offered the job as assistant coach of the Brazilian national team with Chite to be the Brazil manager, but he wanted to come here. And I thought the most significant of the footballing things that he said was to really big up Ousmane Dembélé. Mm. Really big him up to say, this is a guy
mundial.
That... I want this guy to be renewed. I think he can be one of the best players in the world if he's in his, and I thought this was really interesting, if he plays in his position and is well worked on. In other words, I can get this guy to be the player. Now, obviously, whether or not he can is another issue. So those are the kind of, if you like, the sort of the headline elements. I also quite liked his response to a question from Pete Jensen, who said, you know, some players who come back as managers do very well. Guardiola is a good example, but some haven't. Lampard, Solskjaer, Andrea Pirlo. And Xavi said, it's definitely an advantage to know the club. I hope I'm in the Zidane Guardiola group, not the other one. Anyway, beyond that, I mean, the sort of the overall thing about how impressive he was is exactly as you say, very, very assured, very, very clear in his ideas, which we knew about him. But also, I think, and this actually does mirror Guardiola a little bit, we talk about Xavi as a philosopher, and rightly so. We talk about him as an ideologue, as someone with a very clear idea of how the game should be played. And today there was a little bit of talk about that. He talked about structures, he talked about styles, he talked about the influence of Guardiola and Cruyff and one or two others. But more than anything else, I thought he talked about the mechanics, the practicalities of this. And the word that kept getting repeated, which I thought was the most interesting word of the whole thing, was rules.
Hmm.
He talked about rules and order and, if you like, the pragmatic side of it. And I think he implied very heavily, more than once, that this is a club where, for too long, things haven't been done particularly professionally.
Yes.
And that part of his approach is to change that.
Do you think he was talking to anyone in particular?
I don't know. Well, look, there's two ways of looking at it. Talking about anyone in particular in terms of managers, or talking about anyone in particular in terms of
the
players.
The current squad.
I think it was about kind of collective ingrained habits rather than anything else.
Okay.
I also wonder, you know, he avoided the question essentially about, you know, would you have liked to work with Messi? He was asked, would you have liked to have been with Messi? He said, well, yeah, and Ronaldinho and Samuel Eto'o. Now, is it unkind of me to read into that a manager saying his time has gone like their time was? Is that me reading too much between the lines? It might be.
I think it...
But certainly it was him avoiding that question.
He definitely did avoid that question. Whatever it is, good luck to Xavi. He has got a lot of work to do. So said the Patriots.
He has.
After that capitulation in the second half at Celta. To be fair, they have had a lot of injuries. In fact, you could make an entire starting 11 from the players that Barcelona have out injured. At the moment, there were a lot of youngsters out there on the pitch in the second half, inexperienced. Ansu and Nico and Eric Garcia all got injured in that game. They played really, really well in the first half. I mean, really well. Possibly, their best football of the season, I think it's fair to say, maybe their best football of the calendar year, and perhaps beyond as well. But the second half, they just let Celta back into it. You could almost feel it happening.
Yeah, I think you're right. And look, I think any analysis of the game has to take into account the injuries, because I think the emotional impact of losing Ansu is very big. I think the psychological impact of losing Nico might not be as big, but the mechanical impact of it was very large, because I thought he played absolutely brilliantly, Nico, at the weekend. I know it's too early to be saying these kind of things, but I do think he's a more exciting player even than Gavi, I think, in terms of his technical quality and so on. And then they fell apart. But you're right, there's also that thing of this sense that vulnerability never really goes away. And that was expressed very well, I thought, by Frankie de Jong after the game, who said, you know, we're a team who lack personality. He actually said people need to show themselves the ball more. They need to want the ball more. And he essentially basically said, there's something really wrong with us.
Mm.
And he, you know, two or three of his answers were just puffing out his cheeks. He said, you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to say to this. But I thought it was very, very striking. We said, yeah, we don't have personality. I think he's right, by the way.
Well, they've got a manager now with plenty of personality. Maybe it'll be able to rub off on some members of the squad. Obviously, I think everybody watching apart from Barcelona fans would have maybe yelped and whooped with delight when Barry Aspas scored at the 96th minute. He's had a disappointing season, so much so that the coach, Chacho Caudet, had organised a minute's applause in the 10th minute from the Celta fans to try and boost his confidence. He wears number 10. It's a bit weird, really, but it seemed like it worked. Maybe he should do it every game, because he scored two goals, the second of which is so good. I mean, apart from the fact that it's in the 96th minute, it's a shot from the edge of the area, the way he wraps his body around it. I try to do that, I dislocate my hip. I mean, it's guaranteed. But it was just such a sensational comeback from Celta, led by Big Baz.
Yeah, he was brilliant. You're right, it did feel a little bit weird, but it kind of made sense. And Chacho Caudet had been talking in the build-up to this game about how Aspas wasn't at his best, how he was saying he's got that football in him, but it's not quite coming out right. He also said, and actually the statistics bear this out, that Aspas quite often has a slow start to the season and then kind of gathers momentum as we come towards Christmas. And as I say, the statistics do bear that out, so maybe it was always likely to happen anyway. But you know, that 10 minutes applause, Aspas said after the game, of course I noticed, of course I was aware of it, I was very, very focused on it. I think the enormity of what Aspas is was expressed in that, and was expressed in the celebrations at the end, because I think Celta fans, not just because of reasons of functionality, in other words, the fact that Aspas is their best player, I think emotionally are pleased that it was Aspas that scored. And the goal, as you say, is brilliant. You know, it reminded me slightly of Messi's goal against Betis, the one that he curled in off the bar, in terms of the way that he wraps his foot round the ball, because it's a left-footed curler, sort of the wrong way, from left to right, and sort of bending into that corner. Now, it's not the same, because Messi's is more delicate and he hits the bar, but the way he wraps his foot round it, I think it's an absolutely ludicrously difficult shot.
Yes,
the one that he produces. And I think you know, look, everything professional footballers do is ludicrously difficult to us. But I think even for a professional, you don't see players from that position produce that kind of shot.
I was watching it with a full professional, and he was telling me just how difficult it was to do that. He also said that the goal that Toni Kroos scored as well for Real Madrid against Rayo, really, really just super difficult to keep that shot down, which he managed to do.
Because of how high the ball was bouncing,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we just assume that everything's quite difficult for footballers, but when other footballers say, oh my goodness, that's basically impossible, it just gives you an idea of how difficult it was. Big Baz is back. Big point for Celta, who were 3-0 down and managed to come back and draw 3-3 with Barca. On to the other 3-3 of the weekend, Valencia 3, Atletico Madrid 3. Just, you managed to watch us on the train?
Yeah, all of it, except for, terribly, we arrived in Seville, got off the train. In the time it took to walk from the station to the nearest bar restaurant in the hotel on the corner of where the station is, so the best part of 6-7 minutes maybe, managed to miss the two middle goals. The Atletico second and third.
Ah, okay, so you missed the Antoine Griezmann wonder step.
Well, I did then see a replay, but yes, missed it live.
Yes. By the way, I mean, this is, we're not sponsored by AVE, the high-speed rail service in Spain, but it is pretty amazing that you can get on and they will live stream the football to your computer for you. It's
yeah, it really
it's
is.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. I mean, if they want to sponsor us, they can. Yeah, we'd be very happy.
We give them enough money.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
that is true.
Valencia scored 5 added time goals to get points this season. They scored in the 95th minute against Athletic to draw 1-1. They scored twice against Mallorca in injury time, and twice against Atleti as well. They keep going. I guess that kind of tenacity is to be expected from José Bordalás. It's also to be expected that a José Bordalás side is involved in matches with a lot of injury time.
Yes. Yeah. And also, look, let's put this through the prism of Bordalás as well. He said after the game, as you say, you know, it's very good that the team keeps going. It's very good that the team finds a way back into it. But he said, look, we cannot allow this to disguise the truth. This isn't good enough. He said, we can't... The phrase he used, I suppose, in English, you'd best translate is keep hemorrhaging goals. Mm. Keep having this sangria, this bleeding of goals. He says, we've conceded 20 goals this year. And he used that lovely word in Spanish, which never translates particularly well, which is a barbaridad, which is barbaric, which is incredible, which is unbelievable. We cannot be conceding this many goals. And he's right, and he's not entirely happy. But there is something about this Valencia team. That said, I think Atletico Madrid contributed very significantly to this loss. And of course, you know, Valencia Valencia then had Hugo Duro to score the two goals. He's now scored this year against Real Madrid, Sevilla and Atletico. It's not bad, is it?
It's not bad at all. But Atletico Madrid's defending has been pretty poor this season. At this stage of the season, last campaign, they've conceded 5 goals. They've conceded 13 this year. If you put that into the context of La Liga, it's still one of the best defences in La Liga, or it certainly was coming into this weekend. Those 3 goals have altered their record a little bit, but it's still not good enough for Atletico Madrid. And this weekend, they had Stepan Savic back. They had, to all intents and purposes, their first choice, back 3, back 5, whatever you want to call it. And still, it's not working.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things here. One, obviously, is the defence itself throughout the course of the game, because actually throughout the course of the game it wasn't too awful. It just sort of as a general rule, but then they collapsed at the very end. Correct me if I'm wrong. In fact, please don't correct me if I'm wrong, because I've written this today, so if I'm wrong now, there's nothing I can do about it. Atletico have now conceded at least 2 goals in 5 of the last 6 games.
Yes, that's right.
That is great, lovely. And that is obviously too much. But I think it's as well.
I think the only clean sheet was against Barcelona.
Yes. Wow, that says something, doesn't it? Against mid-table Barcelona. Simeone said after the game, it's my fault. And to be honest with you, I'd be inclined to agree with that, because he used his last window to make 3 changes. 87 minutes. He takes off Rodrigo de Paul, he takes off Luis Suarez, and he takes off, I can't remember who the other one is. He sends on João Félix, nothing wrong with that. Sends on Kondogbia and sends on Héctor Herrera. The idea, of course, being, right, let's hold out for these last few minutes. There's a bit of me that thinks, just don't hold out. Just play as you are. Don't have the confusion of 3 players in. Now, look, I always say this. Simeone knows his players better than me. He understands football much better than me. But it struck me as slightly risky, and they lost control. And the goal that wins it for Valencia comes from a free kick they give away. Antoine Griezmann gives away deep in his own corner, which is probably from the challenge that I think he probably doesn't need to make.
I think they're not defending well. Even be a foul by Griezmann, but anyway, we don't need to get.
Well, to be fair, yeah, I think you may well be
maybe
right.
Maybe he's the one that gets fouled, but anyway.
I think he probably doesn't even need to be there. Well, he does need to be there, of course. But I do think there's a vulnerability about Atletico. I also look at them and think, this might not be purely about the players at the back. It's about the structure of the team a little bit more, perhaps. And I think perhaps about just a sort of slight lack of security. Now, all around the team. At the weekend, Simeone had said, it must have been after the Betis game, which is the clean sheet, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, the clean sheet against Betis. They did get a clean sheet against Betis.
And he said, look, if you look at the goals we conceded, I think it was, of the last 4 goals, I think 3 of them had been penalties. And I think one had been maybe a breakaway or something. And he said, so look, you can't look at us and generally say we're defending badly. So we've had these little bad moments rather than generally defending badly. And to be honest with you, I sort of think he's right. I think there's a lack of concentration rather than, if you like, a system failure. But of course, I suppose concentration is part of the system, particularly in a Simeone team.
Just to go a bit further back, I was looking there. It's 2 clean sheets in 10 for Atletico Madrid, which is
not very good at all.
And they came at home to Betis and Barcelona. Let's see if they can fix things up after the international break. They come back with a game against Osasuna and then a big, big Champions League clash against Milan. On then to the Seville derby. 50,534 fans back at the Seville derby. It wasn't quite full. There was a big away section which was only populated with a small travelling support from Sevilla, but they were pretty happy with what they saw. They got a pretty good game as well, up until the sending off, and then that really changed everything.
Yeah, it was a curious one in that it wasn't quite the sort of wild experience that it has been in the past, this derby. But it was an enjoyable game. There was a sort of a hint of menace in the first half. I think, as I put it in our WhatsApp group, an enjoyable hint of latent violence, the possibility that this might kick off. It didn't really kick off. Yeah, a hint of latent violence. It didn't really kick off, although it sort of was close a couple of times. I think in part, because of course the red card comes. I don't actually think, to be honest, that there's too much you can complain about the red card. I thought the first yellow card he got was justified. I think the second yellow card he got was justified, and I think there were, I think it was 3 fouls in between those that could also have been yellow cards.
The second yellow card was his fifth foul in 45 minutes.
And here's the thing, I think I'm right in saying that was his fifth foul of 7 Betis had committed, so he's committing all of their fouls. And but the thing is, obviously at that point, and I asked Pellegrini this after the game, I said, you know, obviously we saw what you did do, but I'd like to know what your thought process is when you get a red card that early in the game. What do you prioritise? And he said, well, look, it's 0-0, so of course you prioritise holding, keeping them at bay and maybe catching a goal. And I think that was, I'm not going to say too clear, because obviously you're entitled to approach it that way, and against a team as good as Sevilla, it's natural to approach it that way. But it did feel like they sort of, they sort of renounced the chance to go for the game, I felt. And for what it's worth, I felt that actually fitted a pattern that had happened even before the red card. I thought Betis were unusually conservative in this game.
I think it's understandable why they were conservative. I think their idea was to not lose this, given what a terrible week they'd had.
Absolutely.
Losing to Atletico Madrid, yes. And then Bayer Leverkusen, and then the biggest game of all. The idea was to not lose. And by doing that, they kind of sort of renounced their identity a little bit this season.
Exactly. That's the problem. It's not just that you play this way because that's a tactical choice. It's you play this way and you denaturalise yourself, for want of a better phrase. And you look at it, in 2021, Real Betis had lost 4 games until last week. They've now lost 3 in a week with an aggregate score of 9-0.
Yeah,
and that hurts, and it hurts them. And Pellegrini was saying afterwards, you know, we have to kind of clear our heads of this and sort of start again and just get back to what it was that we were doing well. I thought Sevilla handled the game very well, and this was something that Lopetegui said afterwards, which I thought was interesting. You know, you're up against 10 men. You've probably had the better of the first half, albeit Betis have made a couple of chances. And of course, Bellerin scores a really nice goal, which is ruled out for offside. And at that point, when they go down to 10 men, Lopetegui's phrase was, you shouldn't look for shortcuts. You can't stop doing the things you're doing well because they're down to 10 men. Mm. Maybe you reinforce them, maybe you accelerate it, but you don't stop doing it. You don't try and think, oh, they're down to 10 men, let's go and get them. And I thought that by the end, Sevilla should have put it out of sight way, way, way before they got the second goal, which was an own goal. Rafa Mir had 3 of the clearest chances you could ever wish to see.
Really should have scored.
Didn't take any of them.
Really should have scored, yeah, in that game, Rafa Mir. The opening goal came from Marcos Acuña, an unbelievable hit.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It's a magnificent strike. We've had some fantastic left-footed goals, actually. I think it was Footballers La Leche on Twitter pointing out that there was a weekend of brilliant zurdazos, fantastic left-foot shots, with Adri Pedrosa scoring an unbelievable
one. Well, that was the
one.
Best of them, wasn't it? Yeah. The Pedrosa one straight from a corner was absolutely wonderful.
For Espanyol, Griezmann's, this for Acuña as well. Some really, really good strikes. And Sevilla winning again. They're very much in the title race at this early stage of the season. Will they be there come the end of the campaign? And let's talk about Real Madrid, who are also still very much in the title race, just behind Real Sociedad, the leaders, and their level on points with Sevilla. Real Madrid after that 2-1 win against Rayo. Ancelotti said after, if the game had finished in the 80th minute, it would have been our best match of the season.
Yeah, he also said, and I think he's right, this ended up being harder than it should have been. And he said, well, yeah, at the end. But as you say, that point about up until then, they played very well. But he then also made the point that, look, this has happened before. And it wasn't just that he said this. He then went on to list the last 3 or 4 games when this has happened. He said, we think it's one and we concede. We think it's one and we concede. We think it's one and it concede. And there's a very clear message there to his players. You can't switch off. Because at some point we'll get caught doing this. Mm. Now, as you said, what was it? 5 2-1s in a row?
4 2-1s.
Now, sorry, 4 2-1s in a row. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think most of those are 2-0 up and then you concede the one. Mm-hmm. So so the 2-1 makes it sound closer than it really is. But of course, by virtue of, maths, the scoreline, it is close. Mm. Because you can get caught. And on Saturday, very, very nearly did. Courtois had to make a good save at the end.
It's 3 2-1s in a row. There was a 0-0 against Osasuna between the...
Okay. Three in a row, and then they nearly do get caught at the end, and I think that's what Ancelotti's point to his players is: you can't believe it's done, you can't just think it's okay. Toni Kroos was saying something similar post game. He was saying that, you know, I think we played very well, we possibly switched off a bit at the point at which we thought it was easy, not easy, but you know what I mean, done.
You saw Falcao, Sydney.
Yeah, not for very long, unfortunately. He came on, he scored a goal, which actually is, you know, it's a slightly sloppy goal in terms of how it goes in. It gets a bit of deflection. But it's a hell of a jump for an old man.
It's a hell of a jump for an old man. And the power he generates on that ball, it does get a little bit of a deflection. It sort of trickles over the line, but it ends up in the back of the net. His first goal ever
at the Bernabeu. He's now out for 3 to 4 weeks. Raya have just released a parte medico,
which is a pity.
Yeah,
a pity, obviously, just because it's him out. But it's also a pity because, of course, this is international break, and it was nice hearing Andoni Iraola say kind of the opposite of what managers normally say, which is, I hope he's not going to be out for the international break. I hope he can play for Colombia because that's really important for him, rather than this whinging because your player's going across the world.
Very, very, very refreshing. Andoni Iraola, what a guy! What a job he's doing.
Yeah,
with this mighty
really
Rayo
yeah.
side who fight and battle and don't change the way that they play football, irrespective of the opponent. They vanquished Barcelona and they nearly got something out of the game against Real Madrid. I think Rayo fans are pretty proud of how they played, even though they lost. Shout out to Real Sociedad. They are still top, fifth consecutive week being top of La Liga. I was convinced this week, Sydney, convinced they were going to slip up against Osasuna. Osasuna had 8 days to prepare this game, during which time La Real had played the Bas derby against Athletic Club and played a tricky Europa League game against Sturm Graz in the absolute pissing rain on Thursday evening. Two really, really difficult matches, exhausting matches. They've had injuries. They're the younger squad in La Liga. I thought, listen, they're going to struggle against Osasuna, the most intense side in La Liga. None of it. Yeah, Osasuna had some chances, but La Real won. They won pretty well. They scored their goals. They could have scored more as well. And just so, so, so impressive. Well done, La Real. Well done.
Assured. They're so assured, aren't they? They're so kind of... Because we've seen this in this run, which is different to last season. Games when they haven't played particularly well, but where there's been a solidity about them, where there's been a sense that at some point it'll happen, even if it has to be a bit fortunate. And a couple of times it has been. Against Elche it was fortunate. Against Mallorca it was fortunate. Both of those games were late goals, and I think fairly lucky late goals. One's a slip and one's a deflection, if I remember rightly. Even in this game, while they played very well, it wasn't the sort of sparkling football we've seen there. But there's something about them that makes you think, yeah, this is more than just a nice team who plays nice football now. This is a team who's starting to realise, okay, we have something else now, and we're competing for something, and it's starting to gather a momentum of a team that I think is starting to realise that there is a target now. And I'm not sure they genuinely thought that last year. I'm starting to think they do think it this year.
After the international break, they've got a home game against Valencia, then Monaco in the Europa League, Espanyol, Real Madrid, PSV, and then away to Betis. And then away to, and then against Villarreal.
Here's a question for you. It's not a nice question, but here's a question for you. Would they be better off getting knocked out of Europe?
I'm not sure they are going to be, but yeah, potentially in terms of their La Liga title, it's probably. But the manager's he's been saying,
no.
Just forget, we can't complain about that. We've got a game every 3 days. That's what we need to be doing. So let's just get on with it. Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of managers, well done to Javi Callejo, who's turned things around at Alaves as well. 10 points from the last 12, and excellent job he's been doing in the last few weeks.
And Joselu. I mean, I just want to throw the name Joselu in there. Maybe we can talk about him in the questions if indeed our listeners send us them. But Joselu, everyone's talking about how well he's playing now, and I think they're absolutely right. But I think it also overlooks the fact that if there was one man that saved them from relegation last year, it was him as well.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, in the Segunda, Almeria are 6 points clear at the top. They beat Burgos 2-0. Eibar drew 0-0 at Fuenlabrada. They're second, but just a point ahead of Las Palmas, who drew 1-1 at the mighty Real Oviedo. A massive win for Leganés at the bottom, 2-0 at Huesca, and for Zaragoza, who also beat Sporting 2-0. It is the international break, and there is, as we mentioned, a huge game on Thursday in Athens. It's Greece against Spain. Massive. And then Spain against
Sweden. You joke, but it is massive. It's absolutely massive.
I'm not joking at all. It is massive.
Both of them, and the Sweden one will be massive as well. Yeah. And Spain probably have to win them both.
Yeah. So
I think they could get away with a win and a draw, but I think they probably have to win them both.
Win and a draw to finish second.
No, a draw and then a win. A draw and a win would finish them first, wouldn't it?
A draw away
and then a win against Sweden. I think Steven finished first.
Okay.
But it has to be that way round. I think it can't be. I haven't got the table in front of me, so it's possible I'm mistaken.
Okay. Well, we're looking forward to those international matches anyway. We'll do a bit of a preview on Thursday over at Patreon. If you want more Spanish content, come and join us. As we said, it's very cheap, pound a week. You get a lot of bang for your buck. So if you fancy contributing to
that... Bang for your buck.
You do, loads of bangs.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Come and join us, patreon.com/TSFP. Otherwise, don't worry, we'll be back here next Monday, as always. The Monday pod, it's free, as always, for you guys. We'll speak soon. Adios.
Cheerio.